Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, voter, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday. Happy healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth. What's on your mind today?
Happy healthy Tuesday. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
My mind is filled with stories of veterans who I love and have loved, and thinking about just all that we've accomplished in the last week or so as a country and all that we are going to be accomplishing moving forward, and how those that have served in the military have been so essential in bringing us to the place that we are today and continue to make it possible for us to enjoy the lives and freedoms that we have. And I think it's, you know, Veterans Day is tomorrow. It was originally Armistice Day. It was connected to the end of World War I. And so the celebration was worldwide at the end of World War I. But over the years and after other wars, it became apparent that we needed to honor those veterans who had served in every capacity in this country and around the world. And so November 11th is the day that we honor our military veterans. And it's important to make the distinction between Memorial Day and Veterans Day, because Memorial Day is set aside to honor those who died while serving in the military. But Veterans Day is our opportunity to thank and honor those who served in the military in any capacity. And November 11 switches what day it is every year because it follows what was originally Armistice Day. So that's a little history behind Veterans Day. But from my perspective, I'm very proud of those who served in my family. My uncle served in Vietnam. My father served in Germany. And my father-in-law was a Navy pilot and served in Vietnam. And I actually dragged my husband in today because I tell the story every year to thank my father and my father-in-law and my uncle, and my husband always corrects it. So I'm going to actually let my husband, Chris, tell you a little bit about his father and his service in Vietnam. Hi, honey.
Hi. My dad was, when he got out of college, he joined the Navy, became an aviator. He served in Korea briefly and then in Vietnam. He did, I think, four tours in Vietnam. There was a bit of sacrifice there because it was away from home for 8 months. They didn't have cell phones, and being connected to the family was, you know, was a distant thing. I remember him sending cassette tapes home of him just talking for 40 minutes, you know, I don't know about what, but every once in a while, you know, my mom would listen to him and then she'd call me and say, your dad wants to talk to you. And it'd be, you know, just a few minutes, him saying, hi, I hope you're being, you know, responsible. And I was, that was in grade school. He was a naval aviator and flew fighter jets, and then later on became a commanding officer of a fighter squadron. We lived in Navy housing at times and lived overseas. So there was a bit of sacrifice. But, you know, I think deep down he loved it.
He loved it.
But he did 25 years in the Navy as an officer.
And he also earned an award, right? When a flying for his service, a Silver Star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Multiple, you know, the Distinguished Flying Cross and Navy Cross, Navy Medal, and a couple other things.
So we're very proud of Donald Barrett and his service. And my dad served in Germany, and you know better than I, he was in the Army.
He was infantry in the Army, Germany, yeah.
Thank you. I always have to get corrected at the end of the show, so today I get to have in real-time corrections. But not just our stories of those who served in our family that we're so proud of. Today, I actually invited one of my favorite guests, who's been with me before on the air, David Kramer, and then a friend of Dave's, Jeff White, who served with Dave throughout their careers, 28 years in the military. And I was going to have them come on and just talk about what it was to serve and, you know, what the military service meant for them and why they decided to enlist or to go to West Point in Dave's case. But then when they were taught, Dave was telling me some stories about his friendship with Jeff and how it's transcended their time in the military together and how much they've meant to each other. And over the past year, Dave has had some health issues, and I hope it's okay for me to share, Dave. You don't have a choice because now I'm talking and you're muted. But it's been a rough year for Dave, and Jeff's been there every step of the way supporting him and making sure that he's okay and getting the care he needs. And so for me, today's story, my Veterans Day story, is about the friendship and the bond and the brotherhood that these two men have formed, and to honor all of those relationships that have been developed and nurtured throughout the years by people who have served in the military, that it's not just about service to country, but it's also about bonds that make us feel connected as human beings. Because as you'll hear, you know, David and Jeff don't come from really similar backgrounds, but they are united in a common cause and a common experience. And that transcended any of their differences. And they found themselves in this really tightly bound commitment to each other. And I kept thinking, Carol, that what could be more important right now than to be working on crossing divides, to be working on building relationships with people that don't have a similar background or maybe even a similar belief. But if we all have a common goal, if we all have a common destiny, and that's being citizens together or building this country or protecting what we love, with a common story, we can transcend a lot of difference. And so that's my goal today. I invited these two men to come on. They're going to tell their stories of friendship and their stories of service. And we're going to honor all of those who have given themselves to the military as we honor Veterans Day. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And although we won't be opening the phone lines, you can still share your comments or thoughts by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Facebook or find us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. I will say I have a couple pretty foxy shots of Jeff and Dave up on Instagram and on Facebook. So any of you who enjoy a man in uniform, they're wearing them today on the air, by the way, although only Carol and I can see them. But you can check them out on Facebook and on Instagram. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. And you can podcast our show and listen at your convenience by going wherever you find your podcasts. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and it'll be uploaded to listen at your convenience. So I look forward to seeing where we go today. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to start our conversation.
Well, it's all right.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And although it's a day early, I want to thank my veteran guests today, Dave Kramer and Jeff White, for your service. Is it appropriate to say, do you say Happy Veterans Day? I'm not sure what the correct term is, but David and Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
I wish people could see Jeff's background. I'm not sure what it is, but it's some sort of helicopter in flight. Can you start off by telling me what the meaning of your background is?
Well, this is the helicopter that Dave and I flew in peace and in war. And it's a piece of us because obviously that's a big piece of our service.
Absolutely. So let's start off and talk about your background. And before you even get to the friend part, why did both of you decide to serve? And I'll start with you, Jeff. What brought you into military service? You retired in 2017 after 28 years, and you started in the Army National Guard. So what was your progression, and why did you initially enlist?
Well, thanks again, Elizabeth, for having us on your show today and for taking the time to talk about a very important topic near and dear to Dave's and my heart, Veterans Day. But to your question, I started out in the National Guard actually to help pay for college and to kind of find a purpose. Wasn't really sure what I was going to do. Had a lot of friends and some family that had served, so I wanted to test it out and see what the Army was about. Army National Guard was an avenue for me, and I progressed from there to Army Reserve Officer Training Candidate, ROTC, or Corps, actually, Reserve Officer Training Corps. To earn my commission. A little bit different than Dave, as you mentioned. Dave was selected for West Point, the United States Military Academy, which is a very difficult and challenging curriculum. And I'm sure Dave will highlight some of those differences.
Yes, it will allow him to expand. But so, Jeff, you grew up in Massachusetts?
I did. I grew up I was born in California, actually, in Mountain View, and was raised in Massachusetts and went to the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. And graduated in 1992 and earned my commission through ROTC.
And so were any of the other members of your family in the military, and were your parents supportive of this decision?
They were. Yeah, my father was in the United States Air Force, so he served there. And then though I wasn't married at the time, but my eventual father-in-law served the United States Coast Guard, and Dave has met him as well. So if he's listening, and then to all the veterans, of course, shout out to them, all the veterans and their families who are listening.
I know. And Dave is quite the Facebooker. So I know that a lot of people got the message today. So Dave, thank you for being on the show again. This is probably our third time getting to chat. Just to catch us all up, talk a little bit about your journey. Why did you decide to apply to West Point, and what was it like to get that appointment? Because I know it's a big deal. And you grew up in Illinois, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And again, thank you, Elizabeth, for having me on again. And it's quite a treat to be on, but to do this with one of my best friends in the world, it means the world to me to do this with him as well. And I'd be remiss if I don't say happy birthday to the Marine Corps, because today is their actual birthday. And I got friends and comrades, and so does Jeff, that we serve with in the Marines as well on many assignments. So I wanted to make sure
Dave.
My dad had served in Vietnam. He was drafted. Actually hadn't even graduated from college yet, and got his draft notice, and went to Fort Campbell for his basic training, ended up at Fort Rucker for a few months before he got deployed out to Vietnam, did his tour of duty in Vietnam, and actually ETS'd out of the military after that. It was a quick 1-2 punch, 2-3 years, and a lot of folks drafted back then went through that, and my mom and dad were very young. So my mom followed dad down to Fort Rucker for the 6-7 months they were down there in 1967, when Alabama versus Illinois were very two different places to live, I can tell you. My dad and mom used to tell me about that quite a bit. That was an experience all in itself, you know, beyond the military. And then my dad went off to Vietnam, and my mother went to live with my dad's folks. So my mom's recollection of, you know, talking to my dad on the phone once, twice maybe, it wasn't very often. They got to see each other for a mid-tour in Hawaii in December of 67. And then dad got out of the Army 6 months later, June of 68. Thankful for his service. He was a powerful influence on me as a patriot. I think I told you that before. And that's where I got my passion for patriotism, my thirst for history, specifically military history. And I'll tell you, I hadn't really thought much about actually going into the military, but, you know, I know it's quirky, but guess what? Junior year in high school, Top Gun came out, and that was a powerful advertising tool for the Navy, but really it was a powerful advertising tool for everybody that wanted to join the military. And I couldn't swim for nothing, so I knew Annapolis was going to be my last choice. But the Air Force Academy and West Point were right up there neck and neck on what I wanted to do. And I just was so overwhelmed by ground forces in World War II, and a lot of the ground forces leaders were former West Point graduates, and so that kind of one thing led to another. My mother was scared to death. She didn't want me to do it, quite frankly, in the beginning, but then as she saw what it was, read up about it, she became very proud, and no one was prouder than me than my mother. So of course, back then with the Apple IIe, she helped me write the essay that that eventually went into my application packet. So pretty amazing, and was very proud to go. So, but fast forwarding many years later as an Army ROTC director, I can tell you from firsthand experience on campus at UCLA that, you know, what Jeff had to do on campus, the distractions that a young college student has on a real live campus to then try to be disciplined, to follow a curriculum in college and then also do ROTC military training. I don't think I could have done that, not nearly as to the folks that I've met. And let me tell you, the folks that went aviation in 1992, they were the best of the best. Us West Point guys, we were given the slots because we had them. Man, the ROTC guys that came into the class of 92 for commissioning, those were the best guys. I mean, I to this day, I look up to those guys. I mean, really, I was honored to be around folks like Jeff.
I was just going to say, Dave, see, I couldn't make it into aviation right out of ROTC. So I went on the ground side for four That's years. Right. I had to get the end around. So to Dave's point, I wasn't quite there yet. I had to hone my profession and skills for 4 years as a combat engineer, and then was fortunate enough to land a flight suit school slot, and the rest was history.
If you're just tuning in, my guests today are David Kramer, a West Point graduate, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army retired, and his best friend, Jeff White, retired from active duty in 2017, moving from Army National Guard to Colonel, U.S. Army retired. For some reason, the colonel is underlined by your name, Jeff, and by David, it's not. So I'm not sure what that is. You can tell the depth of the friendship because you're both trying to lift each other's service up onto a little higher pedestal, because I don't think you can diminish the accomplishments of someone who attended West Point, just as you can't diminish the accomplishments of someone who went from enlisting in the National Guard to becoming a colonel. Both of them are profound. And so we're here today talking about Veterans Day and service. And I don't know who wants to tell the story, because you're both going to be so kind with each other, but someone jump in. I want to talk about how you met each other, because from what Dave said, it was right around September 11th. So who wants to start?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Jeff, let me kind of lead, and then you can correct me as you always have in the past, which is usually necessary. So I had just come out of company command at Fort Campbell in the 101st Airborne. I was PCS and PCS, permanent change of station. I was moving from Fort Campbell, Kentucky to Fort Irwin, California. And it was a long trek across the country. I had a trailer I was pulling with my pickup truck and made it out to California, was storing my trailer, motorcycle, some other stuff in my truck. I'm in the Tiefert Lodge. That's the Fort Irwin hotel on base. So as I'm getting ready to check out, because I'm going to go on vacation, because I had just gotten there, it's September 11th. I turn around and, you know, the planes are impacting the building. And I went into what was going to be my new unit. I was not supposed to sign in for another week. The new boss at the time said, come back in a week. There's nothing that we can do for you right now. We don't know what's going on. Obviously, there's a problem. But so September 11th, I drive down to San Diego for a week of vacation under those circumstances, an active duty guy coming out of command of the 101st, being told to take 7 days off and sign in when you're supposed to. I mean, like everyone else in the country, glued to the TV, wondering what's going on, and didn't spend a lot of, I don't even remember what I did on that little vacation I was supposed to have. I come back, and the unit had assigned a mentor, a fellow observer controller. That's what we were. We were training consultants. That was the unit. We were basically in a training capacity at Fort Irwin. And Jeff was my assigned mentor to be my host and my welcome to Fort Irwin. This is how you work here. And that's how our friendship started. We were both bachelors. He was living in the bachelor quarters on on Fort Irwin, and I was looking for a place to live and found a place to rent down in Barstow, which was, that's a 40-mile drive all in itself just to get to base. And then this is why I'll hand it off to you, Jeff, as you saw this, basically this other captain who didn't know what the heck said from a hole in the ground.
I have to ask, though, two things. One, Dave, you had a motorcycle, and on your vacation, you decided to go to San Diego. So were you truly living out your Maverick fantasy from Top Gun with the motorcycle and going to San Diego to play volleyball?
No, I wish I could claim that, but no, I am.
Did you?
No, I left the motorcycle up in at Fort Irwin. So I didn't enjoy. I like I said, I can't even recall that 6-7 days. Yeah. It was a blur because we were watching the news all the time. So
Jeff, you're already there at Fort Irwin. What was your? How did you get there? Did you go straight from the National Guard? How did you get placed there?
No, so my journey was a little roundabout. Like I mentioned, I started out in the National Guard to pay for college. I earned my commission through RTC, went active duty for 4 years as a combat engineer. So I was not aviation at all. But the combat engineer life was a little challenging, a little bit tough. And I saw the pilots and I saw how they live. And I said, that's the life for me. And just to set a little context, so remember when Dave and I, because I commissioned the same year as Dave did, just by a different commissioning source, Dave West Point, me, RTC. So 1992, we were an Army at Garrison. So Dave and I served our first formative years from 1992 to 2001. We were on active duty. I was started out in the Guard. Then I applied for and was selected for flight school in 1995. So I went to Fort Rucker, the Army's flight school, what we call the initial entry rotor wing course, IERW. Learned how to fly and was fortunate to pick up an Apache attack helicopter transition. And then went off to do my aviation tours of duty. But again, all of this was an Army at Garrison until 2001. So my time.
Wait, what's it? But tell me what an Army of Garrison is, because you're speaking.
So we're training for the eventual possibility of a war.
Okay.
So our mission at that time was to hone our skills, but to train on them. In these combat training centers and other venues. We still had a four deployed presence in Korea, and that's actually where I did my company command time in the Republic of Korea as a aviation captain and an Apache company commander. So as Dave said, he was doing his command at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I did my command in Korea. We both flew Apaches at the time, and we both migrated to Fort Irwin, California. I got there about a year and a half earlier than he did, but that Fort Irwin, California is the Army's National Training Center, or NTC. So again, training prior to 2001, it was important for sure, but it didn't take on the importance it did after September 11th. And to Dave's point, we met there at the Army's Crucible of Training, if you will, the National Training Center, from different experiences. We didn't know each other at the time, but we quickly formed a friendship because of our shared values and our mission focus. And at the time, we quickly transitioned, obviously, to an Army at War. And that shaped us from 2001 till both of us retired many years later. So that's the interesting twist, if you will, on the story, because there was two halves of the story, if you will. The first part, obviously, we didn't know each other. We're an Army at Garrison. But the second part of the story is when we formed our relationship, we were obviously at war.
And so what was that like? Because I would imagine through all the years of training, there's a concept that you may have to put these skills to use. But what was that like to transition to being a country at war for both of you? And you were both bachelors at the time. So how did you make that transition, and how important were these relationships?
Yeah, I think what happened, and as Jeff covered, you know, in the 90s, you know, we commissioned, and the Army was going through a reduction in force from 92 to 94. So we went from an army of 750,000 to an army of 500,000 in that 2-3 year window. So it was reducing. There wasn't any deployments. Bosnia and the Balkans came around. I did a 6-month hitch over in Bosnia, and then did I had done Korea earlier, just like Jeff did later. But all these garrison experiences, you learn how to get focused and with all the training, and that's where the discipline kicks in. So that when you go from a garrison military to now a military at war, you're already trained. You're disciplined. You are ready. And I'll tell you, everybody assigned to the National Training Center, they were asking their bosses if they could go back to their old units right away, because they knew deployments were about to happen and they didn't want to get stuck at Fort Irwin being a training consultant when you trained your whole life up to that point to deploy, to go to the show, as the baseball professional players would say about the playoffs. I mean, now all of a sudden, it's not that you dream or want to go to war, but you've been training up to that point for 10 years, and now you're in this training environment where you're not deployable. You're not going to go, but you're going to train others to go, which was very interesting, because the folks that come to Fort Irwin that you are the consultant for, they're the folks that are going. So that was interesting. Jeff and I only got to establish our meeting there for about a week, I guess, and then he PCS'd to Fort Rucker for another assignment to finish out his training years, and I had just started my 3-year hitch at Fort Irwin, and then had to do another year at Leavenworth in the staff college. So I and this is where, I don't know if you wanted me to get to this now, Elizabeth, but that's when we finally get together in the summer of 05. And that's where our friendship really took off, out of absolute necessity. And we had a fabulous commander named Doug Gabram, who's actually still on active duty. He's now a 3-star general in San Antonio. But to have us just starting our friendship with a commander like him, I mean, it was fate. I don't know how else to describe it. We were in very good hands with him. He was a great mentor to both of us as we were both deploying a unit to war, of which Jeff had already been there for a year. He did the hard part of training the unit, and then I fall in there and took his job as the ops trainer, and he moved over to be the executive officer, XO, as we both were the two majors in the battalion to deploy the unit to Iraq.
So if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And my guests today are Jeff White, Army National Guard to Colonel, U.S. Army retired, and Dave Kramer, U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel retired. I've known Dave for quite a while. He works with my husband, Chris, and he's been a guest on my show many times, and you know, a few times, but also he is very active on the Central Coast, supporting different organizations and speaking on behalf of the Army, and actually being a real inspiration to many veterans who come to the Central Coast for Operation Surf and other veteran support activities. And Jeff, we haven't had a chance to talk about what you've been doing post-retirement, but we're going to get there. We are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, it started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, and the sun went down as across the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we are talking about Veterans Day and honoring and thanking two veterans, Dave Kramer and Jeff White. And so we're talking about their service and their bond of friendship that was formed over 28 years together in the Army, and the different ways that they kind of came together and served together. And so, Jeff, we went into break talking about actually active, active duty. So what was that like when you and Dave ended up, you were flying the helicopter and Dave was bringing snacks, or what was
That's pretty good. So Dave was the operations officer, and as you probably know, but those that are listening don't, Dave is very detailed oriented. He's a planner. So he was our attack battalion operations officer and planner. So for those that don't know, an attack battalion in the Army is about 500 soldiers, 24 AH-64 Delta model Apache attack helicopters at the time. So 500 soldiers, 24 attack helicopters, plus all of the support equipment, quite a bit of stuff, if you can imagine, both ground support equipment as well as aviation life support equipment. Dave was responsible for not only training all of the soldiers, but resourcing them as myself and the battalion commander at the time, then Lieutenant Colonel Doug Gabram, he led the organization, and Dave and I basically ran it day to day. So it was quite challenging. As we talked about before, we had the benefit of approximately 12 years of active duty service at the time. So between myself, Dave, as the two majors, we were both majors, officer grade 4 at the time, as well as the battalion commander, who was a lieutenant colonel, and the command sergeant major, the enlisted grade 9, as well as the senior warrant officer of the unit, the CW5 Greg Turbeville. The five or six of us, if you will, were the oldest in the unit. So we had the benefit of that experience, and we deployed that unit into central and northern Iraq in 2005, a very volatile time. And that's when we really formed the bonds of friendship that will certainly last our lifetimes. And not just with Dave and I, as close as we are, but with many others in that unit.
And so I understand how friendship works, but is there any part of you that tries to hold back a little bit, because you're in a dangerous place and every day you're flying combat missions? Is there part of you that doesn't want to care so much about each other? And what do you do about that, Dave? Because you're an emotional guy.
I don't think so. I think, because we had such a great commander with experience, then Colonel Gabram, now General Gabram, he said, look, we got to eat together. You got to break bread together. And that is going to be the times that we can gel as an inner circle of leaders to know kind of what's going on. And he was right. I mean, I got so fixated with operations. Jeff got so fixated with resourcing the unit as an executive officer with the personnel and the logistics and just dealing with our higher echelon brigade headquarters. We didn't get the chance other than meal time. That was the only time he and I got to really talk. And fortunately, we had a commander who had been to the Gulf War in 1991. And he had been to Iraq on a previous deployment and was taking the unit right back with two brand new majors, Jeff and myself. And man, without him, that was a critical element for our friendship, I think, because we talked constantly, multiple meals, 2-3 meals a day sometimes. And that's where we really gelled the friendship. We gelled how we were operating the unit and what was best. All your decision-making, good, bad, or indifferent, came up with courses of action, just walking to the chow hall, you're in line for the chow hall, you're eating in the chow hall, and you're returning from the chow hall. Just that whole experience that we did for months And then in January, we'd only been together 5 months, and I got split. General Gabram entrusted Jeff with the unit down in Tikrit, and he entrusted me with a new task force that he had to create out of Hyde up near the Syrian border, Tal Afar. And then fortunately we had those many months together, because after that, there was no more eating together. There was no more anything together as majors where you could talk discreetly. And then it becomes, you kind of now already had that trust, which is the most important part in my mind of any friendship. We had that trust when we got split out.
So. And the other thing I'll just add to Dave's point, despite all the obstacles, but despite all the tyranny of distance, as we call it, because as Dave mentioned, you know, we were conducting split-based combat operations separated by over 200 miles and responsible for conducting operations in support of ground forces throughout central and northern Iraq in a very volatile time, as David has described. And I think the other thing in terms of overcoming those obstacles is helping to support each other. And that's what I learned from Dave. And then, as Dave mentioned, we learned from our commander, who we still stay in touch with, who's still serving on active duty, and some other key personnel in that unit, is to stay focused, take care of your soldiers, and focus on the mission, which for us in Army Aviation, which is taught it to us very early on, our mission was to support the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guards, men and women on the ground, period, end of story. You do whatever it takes to support them. And obviously, we were conducting attack, helicopter, reconnaissance, and security missions in that time. But we were also supporting a whole bunch of other missions in the air and on the ground. So anyways, that focus, I think, we were able to hone our skills there, as well as the support we provided each other, still remain to this day.
I think that there's a big piece of it is being a part of something bigger than yourselves. That's what I keep hearing from both of you, is that when you're a part of something bigger than yourselves, everything else kind of doesn't seem as important, because you're just moving together as a unit towards a common goal. And so time goes so fast. I don't want to lose time in the hour, because we have only touched in the first part of your service in Iraq. So what was the progression after that? Because when you came back to the United States, did you serve together again? Were you on the same units again? How did that
come out? I made sure we did, Elizabeth, because I found a house and I said, Jeff, here's where you're going to live with me when we get back. I really didn't give him much of a choice, as I found us a place to rent in Fort Campbell. I also knew he was going to leave a few months after we got back, so I knew he just needed a crash pad. But he was already vetted as a roommate, so I knew that was going to work out.
And you were single still, right, when you returned from Iraq?
Jeff, you were married already.
I was. Yeah. So I had I was married in 2002, but newly married at the time to my lovely wife Sarah, Dave and I, because Dave was with Sandy at that time too. He got married a little bit after, but certainly found the love of his life. And I think the other thing, as Dave and I talked about this, that is worth mentioning. Are the family members who serve right alongside with us. And you mentioned this, Elizabeth, up front with your husband, and thanks for sharing that story. But you're absolutely right. The families that serve right alongside with us oftentimes bear the brunt of our service and our sacrifices. They sacrifice right alongside with us. So Dave and I not only had the bond of the combat experience, but also the bond basically being newly married, and our spouses who were supporting us behind the scenes were very instrumental, certainly in our progression.
Yeah, we got back from Iraq, and I got engaged the next week. 3 months later, in December, Jeff had already PCS'd and he flew out to Burbank. I had to fly to Burbank. I was stationed in Kentucky getting married in Burbank, California. And Jeff made it out there for my wedding. And again, everything, it dovetails into the next step of friendship. I mean, you know, we share all these bonds. Next thing you know, he's in my wedding. A few years later, I'm promoting him on an Air Force base. And it just mean, went Dave? Back and
but
forth.
But for people don't, what does it mean promoting him? Because you didn't, you know, knight him with a sword.
No.
What is the process?
Yeah, the Army selected him for promotion. And he to do the ceremony, he asked me to be there to be the speaker and to help his wife pin the silver oak leaves on his shoulders. And so that was I was 18 months after he was there at my wedding. So, you know, things keep happening in a different way. And then we don't see each other until we're both squadron commanders in Afghanistan. And we happened to be at Bagram together, and we weren't based in Bagram. We were based in other places in Afghanistan, but we kept in touch so much. We knew our schedules, and I'm like, yeah, that's about that. Let's try to do it. And then we ended up seeing each other just for a day in Bagram during a 365-day tour. We were able to synchronize our schedules so we could see each other. And when you're balancing, you know, the 400 soldiers and their families and his squadron and the same in mine, to be able to just take a little bit of time for yourself like that was pretty important for our own humanity and morale, I think. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just add to Dave's point there, you know, both of us commanded in combat, and that was very difficult for me personally in a lot of different ways, because you're responsible for the safety and well-being and execution, or safety and well-being of all your soldiers, and execution of these very complicated missions against a very formidable enemy who's literally shooting at you each day. So that stress and that wear and tear of command, especially in combat, is very difficult. So for Dave and I to be able to meet up, we're actually supporting some special forces. Dave was doing it in eastern Afghanistan. I was supporting those units in northern Afghanistan. And we're able to synchronize schedules, as Dave mentioned, and coordinate a link up in Afghanistan, which, for reference, is about the size of the state of Texas. So no easy task, but we were able to do that. And that meant a lot for me personally and professionally, in terms of my health and well-being, and just to see somebody like Dave, I can't tell you how much that meant to me in a very difficult time, very demanding time. Dave had been to Afghanistan before. That was my first combat deployment to Afghanistan. So I was able to leverage Dave and his experiences as well as what he was doing in his section of the country. And help out what we were doing in my section of the country.
You're listening to my guest, Colonel U.S. Army retired Jeff White, and his friend Dave Kramer, Lieutenant Colonel U.S. Army retired, and they're sharing stories of their friendship that was built over 28 years of service to this country and is carried on now in their retirement. And so let's jump ahead a little bit, because I'm curious. I have two questions, actually, and you can answer them in any order. Do your wives ever feel left out? Because I would imagine that if my husband had spent so many years in such an intense situation with this group of men, that I would always feel like I was a little on the outside. That's question one. And question two, do you miss it? Jeff.
So, yes, I miss it in a lot of ways. It was the toughest job that I had, but the one I loved the most. And just real quick, I would like to mention, I recently read an article, and I got his permission to use this, by Pete Kilner. Dave, you might know Pete. He wrote an article that is called Veterans Love-Hate Relationship with War. And in it, it talks about the raw emotions, combat experiences that few can understand, And most of us have difficulty still talking about it many years after. But that, as you mentioned, Elizabeth, that sense of purpose, unity, and love we share with one another and our soldiers certainly carries the day. And I think that's, after looking back on it and reflecting, that's the part that I miss personally in terms of, even though Dave and I are still very close and we'll always be close. But as you mentioned, it's indescribable in terms of how important those bonds are and how much of a toll it takes on all of us personally and professionally.
And does your wife ever feel left out of that kind of friendship you share with Dave and men you served with?
No, you know, I'm very blessed. I'm very fortunate in a lot of ways, not just with my family and friends, but certainly with my wife, Sarah. Try not to get emotional here.
I wish you would.
But it's tough. When I talk about Dave, I talk about my wife, Sarah, and, you know, I couldn't have done it without her. I'm very fortunate. And again, I've been blessed with an outstanding support network and group of friends, which I count Dave as one of the most important in my life. Long answer your question, Elizabeth, but she's very understanding, and she knows respects how much these relationships mean to me, and supports it in every way possible.
She probably appreciates how having these bonds has stabilized your mental health and made you probably a better husband to live with, because you have these outlets. And Dave, how about for you? Do you miss it? I mean, you're so busy still acting as a recruiter for West Point and speaking at different events. You know, do you miss that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely miss it. Miss it every day. But what I don't miss is some of the stories General Gabram tells us about the stuff that he's doing, that if Jeff and I were to stay in and keep making rank and doing other stuff, the likelihood of those soldier tours of command wouldn't be around soldiers so much as being on some of these really high bureaucratic staffs, which are important and essential to the military strategically, but certainly not what we grew up loving and endearing ourselves to in the military, which was being with troops, being with soldiers. We had eclipsed our time in the military at the lieutenant colonel for me and the colonel mark for Jeff, that the troop time was over. And so what we would be missing if we were in, it wouldn't be the same. So to try to compare it, you know, yes and no, I absolutely miss the formative years, the major time, the lieutenant colonel time, but I don't miss, you know, if I were still in as some old cranky colonel and Jeff, or if he was a one-star or two-star general, like some of our friends are, you know, it's even lonelier as you make rank, you know, and that probably goes to say in the civilian world as well. But to get to your question about my wife, you know, something that Jeff and I both did, we chose very strong women in their own right, with their own educations, had their own families prior to Jeff and I meeting them. And that I just consider it, I'm very humble that, you know, that my wife will actually accept me and all my flaws, which there are tons of, and she has a lot of patience. She really does. And this year, above all else, which started out great, seeing Jeff on the East Coast, January, as it turned out, I knew it was going to be the best month of 2020. I just didn't realize how good January was compared to the rest of the year. So we actually got to see each other in 2020, but then it was all downhill, obviously, after that. My wife is not intimidated by my past. She absolutely was there for me and enabled my confidence to make the rank, to make the selection for battalion command, to endear myself through combat multiple times. I was able to talk to her, unlike in my dad's experience, he didn't get to talk to his wife. Man, modern technology eliminates that. And I hate to be the one to tell those veterans listening in that I was able to talk to my wife virtually every day, but I was. I mean, and that's something the veterans of the past just could not do. But I'll tell you, without it, it would have been so much harder.
And real quick, just to expand on that, because I know Sandy very well, as Dave knows my wife, Sarah, very well. Just a shout out, because as Dave mentioned, you know, obviously we were commanders, forward deployed in combat. Our wives took on the responsibility of essentially assisting as family readiness group leaders for the families left behind. So the FRG leadership and that burden fell on Sandy and fell on Sarah to a large extent. So that, you know, we were able to focus on the things that we had to do. So that again, can't emphasize enough, not just, you know, in terms of supporting the soldier, but in supporting the soldiers and their families back at home station.
And Jeff,
yeah, my wife actually was living in California, so she was supporting the New York families as best she could. But fortunately, yep, she had three very good people that rotated, yep, the job,
which I'll say, you know, actually made it even harder in terms of, at least I can only imagine, supporting the FRG while Dave's unit was out of New York, Fort Drum, New York. Sandy was in California. Again, all the family household responsibilities, essentially as a single parent, Sandy and Sarah both had to bear that burden, as many, many other family members had to do. And the difference was Sarah was stationed, co-located at Fort Hood, Texas, where I was out of, where our home station was, our unit was based out of.
You know, I was always really in awe of my mother-in-law because they had five children. My husband's family had five children, and they moved every 18 months for a long time, not every 18 months, but quite a few times. And from Newport Island to Cuba to Hawaii to San Diego, and she would create the crash kit. And I'm sure you both know that term, the crash kit that would get there long before any of the furniture or clothing, and she'd somehow make it happen. And I am in awe of that because, again, the theme is Veterans Day and honoring those who have served in the military, but it is a family affair. It is a community affair. The military is not just a fringe part of our society because it touches every piece of our community when one soldier serves. So in our last couple minutes, guys, just quickly, what is it like for you now? You're retired, and can you feel the pride in this country? Do you feel supported?
I think so. Memorial Day, Veterans Day, just the outpouring of support that the general population has towards our service members, both former and active, I see on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of them are in tuned to the struggles of those who did used to serve. And I can see that in our local community here in the Band of Brothers outfit in Santa Maria specifically that I've tried to participate with last year before this year. Yes, I believe the general population of U.S. citizens they respect our veterans. They respect our active duty soldiers, airmen, Marines, and sailors. I think, and we miss it, of course. So.
Yep. And I'll just echo that sentiment, Elizabeth, if we can real quick. And as Dave alluded to, you know, we're proud, obviously, hopefully you can hear that, not only proud, we were reluctant to talk about ourselves, but we're proud. I'm proud of Dave, and I know he's proud of me, and we're proud of the units that we've served in, certainly the soldiers that we've served with and their story. But I think the other thing in terms of Veterans Day, and you mentioned this up front, it's a time for us to reflect and to give thanks and to be grateful. It's a new meaning for us now, and I know I can speak for Dave because he and I have talked about this. In terms of the many family and friends that have served, and to understand how much that we have and an appreciation for how good we live as Americans. And you mentioned it, Elizabeth, up front in terms of our many freedoms that are so precious, and that is not free. It's borne on by the servicemen and women and others who serve our nation selflessly and go into harm's way. And those men and women, past and present, are still doing that duty. And that's what's inspiring to me personally.
Thank you, Jeff. That's a perfect way to wrap things up. I want to thank my guests, Dave Kramer, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, and Jeff White, Colonel, U.S. Army, retired. Thank you for spending this afternoon with me. I'll be thinking of you tomorrow and all that have served. And as always, I appreciate everyone for tuning in and supporting us. This is Elizabeth Barrett. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows, follow us on Facebook, and continue supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing, oh, nothing is going right, close your eyes and think to me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call up my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running, oh yeah, baby, to see you again. Spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah.